Wondering what's the buzz? Then tune into Happy Hours for your dose of All That Matters, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
Hello everyone. Today with us we have Anuranjita Kumar, who is a known HR leader, mentor and an author. Welcome to Happy Hours, Anu.
Thank you, Shweta. Delighted to be here looking forward to a rather vibrant session with you.
Very inspiring. Over 26 years of work experience across global managing various assignments, including senior leadership roles in Asia, North America, Europe, through your stints at RBS and Citibank. You've also authored two books, Can I Have It All and Color Matters. Can I Have It All is personally one of my favorites. I have been following your work and I've also had the opportunity to work with you for the Women Ring initiative by NHRDN. We will talk more about it in a few minutes.
Bottoms up.
What has inspired me the most about you, Anu, is that you are one of the very few leaders who truly believes that diversity is not just about gender. There's more to it. So my first question to you, Anu, is what are some moments of pride?
You know, it brought a smile on my face, Shweta, because I was just going to ask you, do you want me to speak about pride or simply moments of pride? And this is the D&I in me, which is, talking. There are plenty. You know, I'm an eternal optimist. So when I start my day, every little thing makes me, I yet live in that wonderment of a little child. So, you know, there are days when I say, oh, lovely coffee. And then I say, oh, a lovely tea. So I think there are moments of pride and there are moments of happiness, which we experience every day. But coming back to the topic of D&I, you know, there are plenty. I think for me, the joy is in those little moments when we are able to make somebody feel included. We're able to make somebody find their voice. We are able to make somebody feel like they belong there. And to me, those are moments of pride, irrespective of any strand of diversity. I think finally, diversity or inclusion, it's all about, you know, how you make everybody feel, and particularly focused on a certain sect, which may be a minority. So every time we talk about D&I, it comes from a perspective of a majority and a minority. And whether we like it or not, there is this general perception about majority kind of rules the roost and minority is the victim here, which may not be entirely true, but there are strands of it which, impact behavior. Whether I look at our own country, there are different diverse strands of people, you know, multiple states, multiple languages, north, south, east, west. And depending on which part of this country you are in and where are you from will decide how much sense of belonging you have to a place. So I think for me, going back, when we did something special for a sect of minority which may not have felt so included has been a moment of pride, whether it was launching a medical policy much ahead of time for LGBT when I was in RBS. And this was a huge risk because at that point of time, we did not even know whether this was going to be made legal and we could have run into political nightmares. But we really believed in what we did. And I think I'm glad, the world followed course. There are moments of pride when, you make somebody who can't see, who can't walk, who can't talk, who can't hear, just not normal. I remember discussions when I'm hiring somebody who's from a disabled background. And I remember in this interview when we were having a compensation discussion, this person asked me, so what would I get paid for this job? Would it be like normal people or how much discount are you going to apply? So obviously in his life, he'd been used to being discounted for a certain reason of being disabled by one of his senses. And people overlooked that he could, irrespective, do the job, which was a task. And we said, well, you're not going to be discounted. You deliver, you're productive, you get exactly what the job pays you. So I think those are few moments that come top of my mind. I mean, gender, there are plenty. I'm not going to go there, but there are plenty. There are plenty. And I think it's something which has been debated often. And clearly, one thing which has been close to my heart has been the whole topic of racism, which is now very, very fueled across the globe. And when I wrote Color Matters, it was again slightly ahead of its time. And I'm glad it's, you know, that topic is now at the forefront. And I just in some ways feel that it's been endorsed. So I think being a little ahead of time, building that impact on inclusion, ideating for new ideas, and then, you know, watching people simply being happy, at calm, at peace, especially when they belong to a minority, is a true moment of pride for me.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anu, for summing that up. Coming back to, the discussion I just raised about the women chatting, I've been, you know, fortunate to work with you in that initiative, the D&I initiative by NHRD Women Touring. It has been a great experience for me, and because I was part of it, I know about it. But for our audience and the larger community, can you just tell us more about this initiative?
So I think Womentoring is a brilliant initiative that has been anchored by, NHRD and Mumbai chapter. And I got engaged with it while I was working with Citibank and based out of Mumbai. And the whole intent is to provide the right guidance, right direction to women, both at work and off at work. And I think this was about women being there for women. So bit she for she kind of initiative. And I think, you know, in a very short span of time, it was seeded, it was launched. And I'm really pleased to see how it's flourishing with a lot of women benefiting from it. I think mentoring can be delivered in different forms across the industry. Some of it is formal, some of it is informal. There are organizations who have their own mentoring programs, and there are, you know, off-the-shelf programs available. I think what's special about Womentoring is their philosophy of being open-minded about any challenges, any issues which women are facing, and sometimes not having the right answer, but tapping into a larger network of women to find those answers. So it's a very open forum. It's a very fluid forum. And I think if you're looking for answers that you may not have as a mentor and also as a mentee, please join Womentoring.
Thank you so much, Anu. And I completely agree with you being a part of that initiative. And I'll be very honest, I say this with pride, that I found my mentor from NHRD and via this network of mentoring. So I'm an ambassador of this initiative. It's a fabulous initiative.
Wonderful to hear that, Shweta.
The exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
I mean, you are a role model to many, including myself. What has helped you to stay ahead of the curve?
That's very humbling to hear, because I don't believe, I should be put onto the pedestal of being a role model for any. I've got a long way to go and lots to do yet. But I think more from what's kept me going is, I think, a little bit of clarity of what I wanted to do at different parts of my life. It's a bit like, you know, every stage of our life requires a different arc. And I think sometimes we make the mistake that, you know, when I started at 21, I wanted to be the CEO or a CXO, and that was the end goal. I can tell you, when you reach there, you realize the goalpost has changed. So I think it's important to realize that, you know, every next level of your life will demand a different you. And let me also share that life doesn't always present you with the perfect opportunity. You create them. So that has been my second mantra. And from personal experience, you know, I've lived life at the edge of its comfort zone. So there are many times I wanted to do different things. I was largely in HR. I went out of HR. I came back to HR. I went across four continents, never having worked there. And it was tough initially, you know, going from India to Singapore, to New York, to London. It was tough. Finally, who was I? I mean, somebody who's never worked there, who's not grown up there, you know, trying to learn, trying to fit in. So what's kept me going is my own clarity of purpose and evolving that as I went along. A little bit of, I would say, actually not a little bit, a lot of tenacity and not, you know, staying afloat, not giving up. I mean, life will throw many things at you. And when that happens, you know, the only thing you hold on to is yourself. So you got to be strong, because there will be good times and there'll be bad times. But I've always believed in the mantra, nothing lasts forever. So when you go through bad time, that will also pass. When you go through good times, you get ready that this will also pass. And finally, paths are made by walking. So keep going if you're pursuing a purpose. So tenacity is extremely important. Clarity is extremely important. And the third thing, I think, is imagination and ideation. You know, try and do something different. We have one life. And trying to follow the same treadmill, you know, just this level to this level, this promotion to that promotion. And sometimes in life, sit back and saying, is that what you were made for? And so this is the question you have to ask yourself. And I did just a few years back. And when I looked back, I said, look, I can do a bigger job, a more global job than I was doing. But, you know, I've got to do something more impactful before time runs out, before energy runs out. Maybe my mind is strong, but my body will not keep up physically in terms of the energy required. And that's how I went into, you know, launching my own ventures. But finally, imagination is more important than knowledge, and knowledge is limited, whereas imagination in certain ways embraces the entire world. And that is finally what creates progress and evolution. So for me, I think clarity of purpose, resilience, and just imagining, just dreaming, and then executing behind that dream is very important. I rarely look back, Shweta, you know, once I moved on. You know, I've had some wonderful employers, and I've had what I am today. I owe it to them in good ways, in every which way, good or bad. But I never look back. I mean, it's a bit like you graduate from school or college and you build fond memories and you keep moving on. And future is ahead of you, not behind you. So keep looking forward would be my fourth mantra. But those are three or four things which kind of keep me on the path.
Thank you so much, Anoa. I really love that thought. We have one life, so the clarity of purpose and, future is forward, not behind us. We just cherish those memories. Thank you so much, Anoa, for those thoughts.
The exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
My next question, you know, and you kind of talked about it briefly. Usually when we speak about diversity, it's mostly around gender. Over the years, there has been some improvements on that aspect. People have started talking about gender diversity, and organizations are taking steps towards that. There are other aspects, like especially Abel, which you just mentioned, racism, which some people don't even think about. And you recently, authored a book about it, again, ahead of its time. Can you share some thoughts about these aspects of diversity and inclusion, and how can we be more inclusive as a workplace?
You know, it's a diversity. You know, a lot of people talk about diverse D&I practices. And I'm kind of, you know, in the mode of saying D&I is a way of life. It's the way you conduct yourself. It's a business. Do you talk about best practices of communication? You don't. You know, it's the way you do business. It's the way you talk to each other. So diversity inclusion for me is a lot about respect and just being respectful of each other, irrespective of who we are. You know, God's made us for a reason. We've been born for a reason. Everybody's serving their purpose. Everybody's fighting a few battles. Who are we to judge? You know, somebody is good, bad, does not fit in. And I think those are the mind games that we have to contend with from time to time, whether we are individuals or we are organizations. So if I was to extend that thought to say ethnicity, racism, you know, black, white, why are black or brown people considered inferior, if I may say, to a white skinned person? I don't know. I've never felt that. But it doesn't matter whether I feel it or not. People around me do believe that's right. You know, I've been in intensively high white environment and mixed environment. And I can now have a look at somebody and can tell you whether they are racist or not. People don't say when they're racist. Nobody likes to believe they're a racist. They just think it happens to other people, right? It doesn't happen to us. And especially if you're in the majority, you certainly don't see anything wrong with anything around you. Only when you've been in a minority and you felt that somebody's looking at you in a different way, or you're being, you know, interjected in between, you are not being heard, you feel hesitant to talk. And I don't see that as a woman. I say this as a brown person. I've gone through that and I know how it feels. So I have a lot of empathy when people talk about it. And in some way, it taught me how to fight back. Because I wouldn't give up and I would like, no, I got to talk. And sometimes that didn't land well. People would think, oh, you know, you're being too pushy, because a brown woman is not supposed to be pushy. So, you know, you shouldn't be speaking like that. So I think, look, diversity has to be an inclusive topic, right? By the nature of the topic we're talking. So it, you know, the most often topic related to diversity is gender. And I think plenty is being spoken about it. So let's try and focus on other topics, like whether it's, you know, disability, it's LGBT, it's racism or generation, which is also, you know, a lot of corporates are talking about. And I think from a workplace point of view, it has to be about their own openness, openly to accept it. At the risk of being a little controversial, I find that's a mixed emotion in the industry, where it's a good thing to talk about, but get down to execution and putting budgets around it, not easy. Because very often the question you will get faced with is, so Anu, what's broken that we're trying to fix? You know, we're doing the business, our consumers are happy, products are fine. Anyway, we are strapped on COVID. So why do we need to do this D&I chit chat? It's not relevant right now. You know, we'll do it when times are good. No, the point is you have to do it at the point when times are not good, because when you have slightly different set of people, maybe they will come up with solutions that you can never think of, because problems of tomorrow will not be solved by solutions of yesterday. And until and unless you have people who can ideate, innovate and think differently, you will not find a new consumer, you will not find a new product, and thereby you will impact your P&L. So I think it's very important to build that connect between a very straight on connect, not because, you know, a big consulting company like McKinsey said in 2015, 2018, there's a connection between diversity and P&L. Yeah, there is. But I yet sometimes struggle in the market where it is a nice to do rather than important to do. And if you dig deep, Shweta, you will find that there are yet barriers. So in organizations, every organization is doing a lot around policies, right? We will do a lot around diversity. Yes. When I ask for data, so let's go to gender. When I ask for data, people will tell me, you know, we got 30-35% women. And I dig deep into it and saying, okay, tell me what level are they in? Oh, junior levels, right. So how many do you have in decision-making roles? Not more than 3 or 4%. So that's the problem. We are not really focusing on putting together the components which really work. And let me also acknowledge that it may not just be an organizational issue. It may be also an issue with women, you know, in terms of aspiration and ambition to be there. And that's something there are plenty of organizations looking at. The second bit is, if you look at things like disability, the government mandates that we need to have 4% people of special needs into the organization. Now, that's the law, okay? It's not mandated because it's very difficult to execute. Now, let's unwind. Why is it difficult to execute? Because there is no supply. Supply chain is broken. Why, when you look at supply chain, you realize that when you go home to home, kids who have any special needs, you know, especially when their parents are poor or middle class, don't go to school. So leave alone going to college and getting to the workplace. So the supply chain is broken at the lowest level of families. And those children are deprioritized from schooling. And I'm not talking about you and me. I'm talking about lower middle class, which is the masses in this country, where a lot of talent is embedded. So I think when we talk about PWD, we can have best of infrastructure. We can have, you know, ramps, and we can have, you know, keypads which enable blind people to work. All of that we can have. But how many of us are really going out there and building this supply for PWD? Very few. We take solace in giving money from our CSR funds. And I feel quite strongly about it because I have visited a few centers. And I know how bad it is. So I feel that we are far away from solving the problem of disabled people in this country. I think there is a lot of discussion, which is very welcome, but a lot more needs to be done by industry if we seriously believe in this agenda. Coming to LGBT, I think the government themselves have, you know, kind of legitimized, which has been a great step forward. And pleased to see, you know, the traction in the industry and what has gone on and, you know, And I think there have been some very progressive policies, not just the medical policy, which I talked about earlier, but people are exploring, you know, various partners. And I think they're welcoming that move, which makes the community feel a little more settled, a little more calm. And I have a lot of LGBT friends, and very often they tell me, every time I ask them, saying, why don't you come out in the open now? It's legit, right? And they would say, but I don't want to be part of office gossip. Just because you want to meet your numbers, I don't want to be part of office gossip. So socially, it will take much longer. But I think we stepped in the right direction. And, you know, in one of my organizations where we were working, we do this employee satisfaction survey, right? So in demographics, what we found was there were about 250 people ticked who were part of LGBT community. But people who were officially out, thanks to the medical policy, were only 10. So it gives you a sense that there is work to do in terms of inclusion. And a lot of LGBT community right now is feeling very more settled and comfortable that, you know, its basic dignity has been provided. You know, a cop can't haul you on a road for being a person with a different sexual orientation. But the acceptability of LGBT at workplace is yet building up. So I'll give you another example where somebody came to me and saying, why shouldn't we do a LGBT career fair? And I was like, but why do we need to have a LGBT career fair? It should be just a normal career fair. Why does somebody have to tell you their sexual orientation to get hired? Why should I have a special career fair? I understand special career fair for women. I understand special career fair for disabled. I get all that.
Right.
But I don't for LGBT. I mean, so what am I trying? What is it through their sexual orientation that they need to do differently? Nothing. Nothing really.
Right.
Nothing. Right. If I'm a straight person, do I have to do something differently? Probably not. So LGBT. And then I think, you know, looking at generation and ethnicity, I think on ethnicity, India is a little further away, though it's been a lot of awakening thanks to what's happening globally. But I think on generation front, we have been ahead of the game, you know, and I should give credit to the industry because people are working through, given the demographics of India where, you know, average age is about 30. We are a fairly young country. So there is this nice mingling which goes on given the startup ecosystem. So I see Indian industry quite progressive, and they welcome views from youngsters because there's a bit of an acknowledgement, you know, if you're in a tech industry, you are as a younger person ahead of the game. So I find that in a much more comfortable place right now.
I agree. Anu, my last question before we go to the rapid fire is, what is your advice for the women who are planning to return to work after a sabbatical?
So one is, I would say brace for the challenge. It's not really a challenge, but brace for this change, not challenge maybe. What I find is that the conversation with any returnee, man or a woman, is all about purpose. Why do you want to come back? And Shweta, we did a little bit of a survey, and here are three data points we got. I want to come back because I need the money. Okay. Fair, good enough reason. Okay. I want to come back because I'm bored. My children have grown up. Nothing else to do. Okay. I'm bored, so I want to come back. Right. Okay. Third is, you know, serious. I want to come back because I want to do something more useful with my life. Right. I'm not feeling that I'm contributing enough. And these are typically the three reasons that we get from returning women. And needless to say, the ones who survive the change is the last category, were much clearer about why they want to come back. Not because just they need, the ones who need the money will survive, but it's if they're not emotionally aligned, it's a tough ride. The third category is the easiest ones to fall away. You know, they come back and they don't integrate well. Whereas the first will integrate under pressure, third will integrate really well because they've thought it through. So I'm finding that more women are gravitating towards the third category, which has been a welcome change. Even though I'm quite disappointed to see that during COVID, you know, number of women in workforce per se is decreasing. So I don't know whether you've seen the Mint survey last week, but doesn't look right. You know, during COVID, if 29% men have left the workforce, 39% women have left the workforce. And that is at a starting number, which is much lesser. So a lot more women are right now sitting on a break on the bench and are ready to come back. I think the women who have shorter breaks find it easier to integrate. Women with longer breaks need a little more handholding. So my point is, you know, embrace for the change, find the purpose and find the reasons why you want to come back. And that gives you energy and it fuels you up. And third is, you know, like anything else in life, you know, there will be ups and downs. And this is the point about the change. But I think having some support around you, which keeps you on the path, is truly helpful. So those are the two or three things from my experience that I find, I usually tell the women who are coming back to work.
Thank you so much, Anu, for those messages and tips. Surely helpful to many. All right, so last section, the rapid fire, and I have some interesting questions for you.
The rapid fire round.
So here we start. What is your passion?
Passion is, do something which, you're remembered for, and you create an impact. And that could come in forms of, you will see me writing books, or, there's a thread in what I'm doing. It's largely around D&I, whether it's my books or it's what I do currently or what I've done in the past. So in some way, I think passion for me is, finding some bit of creativity in diversity. And that's what you see me pursuing.
All right. My next question, and this is going to be very easy. A book you recommend everyone must read.
Can I say two? Okay. Color Matters and Can I Have It All? So two books which I have written, but no, those I recommend you read and give me feedback. But the one I find really useful and I read some time back was Factfulness. And I think in times of COVID, remaining close to data is very helpful. And I found that, actually the world is not as bad as we think it is. There are good things happening around us, but somehow the bad things always overwhelm our mind emotionally. So stay close to data and it will keep you on the path. So Factfulness.
Thank you. In a sentence, how would you describe what is the new normal?
The new normal? In a sentence, I think a new sunrise. That's how I would describe it, Shweta. It's challenging us to think differently. It's a new sunrise, and I wouldn't say the sky is blue or pink. Maybe the sky is green. And now how are you going to deal with it? And so I think it's, as a species, as a race, it's kind of pushing us to redefine ourselves. So it's a new sunrise. And as I said, that's again the eternal optimist in me.
Thank you so much, Anu. It was a pleasure speaking to you, as always. Quite insightful, a lot of learning. And whenever I speak to you, there's always a beautiful message that stays with me. So thank you so much, Anu, for your time. And it was wonderful hosting you.
Pleasure's entirely mine. In some ways, I think you bring the best out of me. So thank you for being there and thank you for your friendship.
Wondering what's the buzz? Then tune in to Happy Hours for your dose of All That Matters, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.